Okay. Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is Tuesday class, 5th of November, 2019. So let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya. Then mindfully we shall proceed with the chanting. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Quan Sư Hình Bồ Tát. Namo Quan Sư Hình Bồ Tát. Namo Quan Sư Hình Bồ Tát. Namo A Di Đà Phật. Namo A Di Đà Phật. Namo A Di Đà Phật. Namo Mi Lo Pho. Namo Mi Lo Pho. Namo Mi Lo Pho. Namo Phụ Thiện Phụ Sa. Namo Phụ Thiện Phụ Sa. Namo Phụ Thiện Phụ Sa. Namo Di Tạng Vương Phụ Sa. Namo Di Tạng Vương Phụ Sa. Namo Di Tạng Vương Phụ Sa. Namo Phổ Phụ Sa. Namo Phổ Phụ Sa. Namo Phổ Phụ Sa. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang namassami. Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho sanghang namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then turn to page 1 of the chanting book. We shall chant from the Vandana onward. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dityampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dityampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dityampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Adinadana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Kamesu Micchachara Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Musawada Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Surameraya Majjhapamadatthana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Now we will chant the Padipa Puja, offering of likes. Gannasarapaditena Dipena tamadang sena Tiloka dipang sambuddhang 不加亚弥达摩奴让甘达桑巴拉尤帝那德佩那行苏刚希那不加耶不加尼扬当不加巴加那穆德芒完那甘达格诺佩当耶当格苏玛三塔听不加亚弥摩尼达斯西里巴达萨罗罗嘿不切弥不当可苏梅那尼那不内那摩地那车火土摩康不邦米拉亚蒂亚达伊当梅迦由达达雅蒂维那萨巴王阿迪瓦塞图诺班提巴尼扬巴里卡毗唐阿努堪邦乌巴达雅巴提甘哈图穆特芒阿迪瓦塞图诺班提巴勒巴里卡毗唐阿努堪邦乌巴达雅巴提甘哈图穆特芒阿迪瓦塞图诺班提波迦南巴里卡毗唐阿努堪邦乌巴达雅巴提甘哈图穆特芒Now let us rejoice with the latest offering from Yun Chan and Hana. Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. Then we will chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind.And help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense.May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity,and the fruit of all karma, so that we will diligently strive on peacefulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body,so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, the bond-free Nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born all these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya,be further strengthened until they become balas or power, sharing and transferring merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, I just received a message from Jitao, Sam's son. He said the mother, the popo, last minute got to cancer. So he will come maybe next week. So whoever want to sit on that seat, you can sit. she is not coming. Okay, you can have half an hour of silent awareness meditation. Eh? Oh, the triple gem. Okay, so we will pay respect triple gem first. Pedang pujami. Damang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay. Now we can have half an hour of silent awareness meditation. So we are off the light. Then you all can relax body and mind. Then develop the silent inner awareness to realize your true mind, the silent mind. Then from there, develop the understanding. Since all of you are here before, so we don't really need to go into the details of meditation. You all can just proceed with your whatever meditation that you have developed the understanding. Always remember the four support. Relax, aware. This first two step is most important. When you relax both your body and mind, you are at ease. There is no stress, nothing. You can just allow the mind to be. Then the body that is relaxed has got no tension, no tightness or no stress within. But if you are new, you may not be able to do it, because most people who are new, who has not developed the understanding of meditation, they don't know how to relax because they are not sensitive. So most of the time after a tired day, they are quite stressed out within, without them even knowing. And the reason being, they are heedless most of the time throughout the day. Because they are heedless, the thought is very active. Their mind state, most of the time, with the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. The reason being, they lack the spiritual faculty. And because of that, the mental hindrance take over. Especially sensual desire and ill will. These first two mental hindrances, they are very powerful. The putijana or the lay people, most of the time, unless they are cultivator, their mind are heedless throughout the day. They think a lot. They react to sense experience, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. Conditioned by their habitual tendency, their self-delusion, their ignorance. So all this make them heedless. That's why they cannot meditate. Where these mental hindrances are mind states that will hinder their mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. But for us, because we understand, so it's very easy. You have mindfulness. You are more restrained in your senses. Means you will not heedlessly react to sense experience like before, because you have developed some form of wisdom, initial wisdom and understanding. And most of the time your mind is heedful, aware, mindful in the midst of life. That's why your mind states are mostly in the state of sati, and you have faith, sadha, virya, spiritual zeal. The spiritual faculties are there. And if you have stabilized your sati, your samadhi will be there too. Then you can meditate, because these are spiritual faculties that can allow you to understand spiritual teaching. That's why cultivator who has the spiritual faculties, they can meditate easily. They can just relax, maintain awareness, and they will go into the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, where there is no mental hindrance. So sati will take over. When there is sati, there is no thought. There is only inner peace, inner awareness, clarity. Then you can realize your true mind, your silent mind. That is your meditative mind. That is the mind that can understand truth, that can awaken, that can see all the movement of thoughts, the aggregates of mind. And through that observation, choiceless inner observation, you can develop wisdom, understanding, to really understand who are you, what are you. And you can see the universal characteristics of mind, of all the aggregates, of all phenomena that arise and passes away within your own form and mind. Then you can understand all the essential Dhamma. You can see them, you can witness them. And you will also understand why Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 is so important. Why did the Buddha say our mind is the forerunner of all things? Mind is chief. When mind arises, all things arise. This one refers to the mundane mind. The one that is aware of this is the true mind, the silent mind, which is beyond word, beyond thought. But that one can see things clearly, can see things as they are, can develop the understanding. That one is free of all conditioning. Yes, it's the unconditioned. It's just aware, nothing else. The awareness nature is a very beautiful inner nature. That's why your true nature within, your self nature within, that one is the meditative mind. That one can understand and realize the truth. It can awaken to the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self, or empty nature or existence. Anicchang dukkang anatta. So all this you will come to understand if you know how to develop this style of meditation. We call it awareness-based meditation. So first is to relax body and mind completely. Relax and let things be, let the mind be. Whatever thought that is still arising, let it be. Then because you just let it be, maintain awareness, all those sankara activity or thinking, they will slow down, then finally they will cease. Yeah. Then your awareness can be aware of your heartbeat, aware of all the vibration within your own form and mind. Whatever contact with the senses, it can also be aware. So this is how you meditate. Silent, relax, aware, maintain awareness. Whatever that arise, let it arise and pass. Let it arise and pass. No more verbalization, no more trying to know, just aware. Aware. Until the Monday mind slow down and finally cease. When there is no more thought, there is only this inner awareness, peacefulness of mind, silent mind, tranquility of mind. Then you can realize the inner peace, the inner awareness, the silent mind within. That is your meditative mind. Stay with it. So the third support is 24 hours means try to be aware all the time, most of the time. Initially it's your waking moments. Later on you can go into your sleep. So relax, maintain awareness for as long as you can. There is a third support. That 24 hour means continuous awareness or mindfulness. Then finally, the fourth support is trust. This one you don't do until you connect to your nature, until you connect to your true mind. Then you can relax and silence everything and stay around the heart area to detect the gateway to your nature. So when you do that, you don't focus, you don't concentrate, you don't use the thought, you trust your nature to do. The silent mind, the inner awareness, will detect the gateway by itself. You just silent, relax. When there is completely no thought, then the awareness can detect. Then when it detects, the movement will happen by itself. Initially, it's like all the yin yang energy that you have developed through whatever training of mind that you have done, they will start to melt into it. And when it melts into the gateway, your nature will know. It's very soothing. It's like a very soothing type of energy just goes in. It's like melting inside. Then when it goes in, it transforms into pure energy. And this pure energy is intelligent. It will know where to activate, where to move. It will move by itself. That's why the fourth support is trust. Trust your nature to do. No interference from the thought. No mind to direct the meditation. Nothing. Just silent, relax, maintain awareness. Let that nature detect the gateway. That is the most important. Then everything will happen by itself. Then you will become very quiet and very still, like completely without thought, and just stay in that state for as long as you can. Then whatever that arises from there, be aware, just maintain awareness. Then you will understand. The understanding will happen by itself, not through the thought, not through your memory and knowledge. Whatever that arises, the nature will understand. Then you will understand who are you, what are you, what the mundane mind is all about, and how you function as a human being. How the paticca-samuppada arise and pass away, all the various type of link. Later on, when you come out of the meditation, you can understand them very clearly. You can be at the moment of contact, moment of perception, moment of activity, the movement of sankhara. And later on in the daily life, you can even be aware of your conscious moment. Like in the seeing consciousness, you can be at that moment of consciousness before the mundane mind input the content of consciousness. But when you have developed the daily mindfulness, the initial wisdom, then the awakening through this type of formal meditation, then your wisdom will take over. Then you will act according to wisdom, no more according to memory. The wisdom will teach you how to act. It will prompt you. That's how later on the input of the content of consciousness is by that nature which has the wisdom connected to it, the understanding. From that moment onward, you can say the form and mind is enlightened because it's no longer deluded. That understanding is the one that enables you to act, to liberate your mind, to free your mind. Okay, with that, I will let you meditate on your own. Then when the half an hour is up, the alarm will go off. After that, I will ring the bell 3 times. Then you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Turn to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chakravalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammam Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakkamokkhadam Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Ittipeso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vijacharana Sampano Sugato Lokavido Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditapo Vinohiti Supatipano Bhagavato Sakkasangho Ujjupatipano Bhagavato Sakkasangho Nyayapatipano Bhagavato Sakkasangho Samichipatipano Bhagavato Sakkasangho Yadidam Chattari Purisa Yugani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Sakkasangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaneyo Anuttarang Penyaketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect to Tripuja. Pedang Pujayami. Damang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay. You can be seated. Yeah. just relax body and mind, and maintain some form of attention. In front of you, there's a yellow book. So tonight, I'm going to this book. This transcript book is very important. It is based on a Dhamma talk that I delivered in the year 2013, 23rd of June, at Subangjaya Buddhist Association, SJBA Temple. The title is Importance of Having Mindfulness and Heedfulness to Cope with Life's Problem and Suffering. And in bracket is a method of stress release via meditation. This book is based on a direct transcript from the recorded Sunday Dhamma talk delivered by me at SJBA, Subangjaya Buddhist Association, on the above topic that I just mentioned. So I prepared a synopsis actually. You turn to page 5, yes, synopsis and notice of talk by SJBA. So this was prepared by me. I remember I forward to Sui An. Then Sui An put it on their webpage and sent out as a notice. So regarding Dhamma talk on importance of mindfulness and heedfulness to cope with life's problem and suffering. So the notice goes as follows. I read to you. Brother Teo is giving a Dhamma talk at SJBA this Sunday, 23rd June 2013. That was 6 years back. At 10 a.m. on the topic. Importance of mindfulness and heedfulness to cope with life's problem and suffering. As this topic is very relevant to life, it is hoped that you all can find the time to attend this rather important talk. Human suffering are very real and many people are afflicted by it. Even our youngsters are not exempted from it. Some of them can be very traumatic with suicidal tendencies. Grief, sorrow, lamentation, fear, worry, and anxiety, leading to severe depression and sadness, etc., are very common nowadays. Some consult doctors, psychiatrists, mediums, feng shui master. Some seek God, religion, and friend for help. But are they really effective? That is the question. Maybe some are, but most of them are only temporary solution which may not be effective at all. Instead, can meditation together with its understanding and medication help? So this is the question that each individual must reflect on and contemplate. If you are interested in such topic, then do come for the Dhamma talk. You can also bring your friend if you like. So hope to see you all on this Sunday. Then there is also a acknowledgement part. It is the donor's sincere intent that this Dhamma transcript book be given free to those who are interested and have the affinity to receive them. I like to take this opportunity to thank and rejoice in the generosity and wholesomeness of all those Dhamma friends and Kayamita who has donated and helped out in the transcription, typing, typesetting, formatting, proofreading, etc. to make this free distribution of Dhamma Dana possible. Special thanks should be accorded to Sister Ji Guanyin or Puan Chi, or call her, who has taken her own initiative to volunteer to develop the initial draft transcript for my subsequent editing without instruction or request from anyone, thereby enabling this Dharma transcript book to be printed. Her email to me was as below. Dear Brother Theo, attached is the draft transcript for the 23rd of June 2013 at JBA Talk. I am most grateful that my understanding is deepening through my own cultivation and each time I do your transcript. Mahasadhu, Brother Theo, for your clear pointing and guidance. With deepest gratitude and love or metta, always. Signed by him. Then by the power of all this wholesomeness, may all beings be well and happy, free from all mental and physical suffering and danger, and may there be love, peace and joy deep within their hearts. And may it also pave the way for there to be causes and conditions for all Dharma friends who have donated or helped out in one way or other to realize their good and noble wishes or aspirations as soon as possible with metta. So this book was printed much later, January 2018. So if you have them in your house, you better take it out and read it. Then today I'm not going to read the introduction or those things. That one you go back and read. Introduction by Brother Chim, the president of SJBA, that one you read through, it's quite good. Then the Dharma talk proper by me, also I spoke quite a bit of the essential Dharma of the Buddha. Then leading to all the relevant cultivation. You have to read through, they are very important. Then turn to page 13, so that we have time for our other topic too. Page 13, the top second paragraph. The Four Noble Truths is one of the most important spiritual law that you need to truly understand. The Buddha first explained what is suffering. We are proclaiming the First Noble Truth of Dukkha or suffering. Then in his Second Noble Truth of, he proclaimed the cause of arising of suffering, which is craving, born of your self-delusion and ignorance. Then he moved on to the Third Noble Truth on the cessation of suffering, the ending of suffering, the liberation of mind, the realization of enlightenment. That's why the Buddha said, suffering need not be when we have the wisdom, when we have trained our mind to be heedful, to be mindful, and to develop the meditation as taught by him, so that you can realize the Dhamma or the wisdom that he has realized. The Noble Truth that he has realized and taught to us. Then enlightenment in the here and the now will be possible. Suffering need not be. All of life's problems can come to an end. This is the part that we are interested in. The realization of Nibbana, the enlightenment, that can bring about complete liberation from human suffering, from all mental suffering, free from all life problems and situations. No more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety, no more sorrow and lamentation, no more of all those depression and negativity. Then after that, the Buddha moved on to the final Noble Truth, which is the Fourth Noble Truth. He not only said what is possible, he even taught us how to do it. He said under the Fourth Noble Truth, there is a path that can lead us to the end of all suffering, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. So that's the reason why Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation. Then next page. The Buddha said, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, which has eight Noble Path Factor that can make you Noble One or Enlightened One, then it will lead to the end of all suffering or cessation of all dukkha. Then no more problem, no more suffering. This is basically the introduction and summary to explain to you how beautiful the Buddha Dhamma is, how beautiful the Buddha's message is, and how fortunate we are as Buddhists to have this teaching that can give us such good understanding of life. Now I will go into the Dhamma talk proper. If you may recall the Buddha before he passed away or before he entered Parinibbana, over 2,500 plus years ago, what was his final instruction to the disciple and his lay devotees? Can you all remember? What did the Buddha say? Some of you may know. Anybody want to try? Yes, very good. And sadhu. Yes, strive on with heedfulness. Do not be heedless anymore. The Pali equivalent is apamadena sampadeta. This is the final advice. Why did the Buddha say that? Because according to the Buddha, he has realized this rather important truth, that the only mind quality that you need to have is this heedfulness or mindfulness. Then you are assured of the spiritual life, the noble life, and the enlightenment will follow. So it sounds quite easy, isn't it? I only need to be heedful or mindful, then I'm already on the path to enlightenment. And all this, the Buddha actually mentioned them and emphasized on them under his Dhammapada verses. Have you all heard of Dhammapada verses 21, 22, and 23? Eh? That time the audience are still not familiar. Eh? For you all, you have heard it many times. Eh? So I have to explain to them. Under the Dhammapada, there are 423 verses that the Buddha spoke. And all these are eternal truth. Even until today, each and every of these 423 Dhammapada verses still stand. They never get obsolete because they are evergreen. During my early years, I tried to contemplate and reflect. How can the Buddha be so wise? 423 of this evergreen truth asked me to come up with one truth that can last a century or two. Also not easy, because a lot of this so-called truth that living beings come up with, sooner or later they become obsolete. Even certain scientific truth can also become obsolete. Later understanding will make them obsolete. But the Buddha is so wise. All these Dhammapada verses that he spoke of 2,500 plus years ago had remained eternally valid until today. That's why it's very unique and very special. There are 20 verses within the Appamada Vaga. Appamada is heedfulness. The verse on heedfulness, the verses on heedfulness. And the starting verse is verse 21. And the Buddha make it very clear. He said, heedfulness is the path of the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. This is very important. It explained to you clearly the importance of heedfulness. Without heedfulness, he said, you are as if dead. What does that mean? It means you may be alive, conscious of life, but you are spiritually dead because there is no spiritual life for you anymore. That's why you are as if dead, because through ignorance, through delusion, you only existed through life. You never live life. Whereas the heedful never die, because for those who are heedful, they understand through their cultivation and wisdom what death is. And they understand clearly nothing dies and no one dies, where it is anatta, non-self and empty nature of existence. So because of that, the heedful never die. And they are destined for enlightenment. Because Dhammapada verse 22 and 23 that follows clearly pointed out to the monks and the devotees at that time the importance of heedfulness. Dhammapada verse 22 is a continuation of verse 21. The Buddha said clearly and distinctly, understanding the great difference between heedfulness and heedlessness. The wise one intend on heedfulness, and because they do that, they will rejoice in the realm of the Aryas, or the enlightened one. So when you intend on heedfulness, you will be assured of enlightenment. You can rejoice in the realm of the enlightened beings, the Aryas. Then verse 23 confirm everything. Under Dhammapada verse 23, the Buddha said, the ever mindful, constantly meditative, and the steadfast one, they will definitely realize the supreme born-free enlightenment that he called Nibbana. So what is ever mindful? Ever mindful means you are most of the time continuously aware and mindful. Then constantly meditative means using this mindfulness that you have developed or trained to constantly cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Within the Noble Eightfold Path is also the Four Noble Truths, cultivated as stated under the first path factor of right view, and the seventh path factor of Samasati under the fifth category of practice of Dhammanupassana, the four foundation of mindfulness. All his essential Dhamma or teachings spin off from this Four Noble Truth. That's why when you use it to cultivate the essential Dhamma that the Buddha taught you, that is constantly meditative. So when you combine these two, ever mindful and constantly meditative, you become heedful. The steadfast one means you hold on to this heedfulness practice steadfastly or continuously, then you are destined to realize this supreme born-free enlightenment, Nibbana. So that's the reason why heedfulness is so important. And then next page is very important. Importance of heedfulness. This is the most important Dhammapada verse that you should bear in mind. That's why heedfulness is very important. Heedfulness will lead you to the cultivation of the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. And only this can free you, nothing else in this world. This brings us back to the point where during the month of February, I was supposed to have my first scheduled talk on the benefits of meditation here. But I didn't have a chance to come and give that talk, which I must sincerely apologize because I have to go through an angioplasty procedure. So I miss out on that talk, but don't worry. I will include that topic in my today's Dhamma talk because they are related. Heedfulness will lead to the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So today I will just add in this part, the benefits of meditation. When you are heedful, what does it mean? It means you are ever mindful, plus constantly cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So this is most important because like what we had discussed just now, the Fourth Noble Truth is about cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path. If you cultivate this Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. All of your life problems will cease to be. So heedfulness is equivalent to be ever mindful plus constantly meditative. Without mindfulness, you cannot start. Mindfulness is an English translation of the word sati used by the Buddha. The real meaning of sati or mindfulness is awareness before the knowing. When you are silent and aware before the thought or the aggregates of mind come out, that is sati. And when you are in sati, you can see things as they are. Your mind are not clouded by the thoughts, by the aggregates of mind. There is no activity and no movement inside. But the awareness can allow you to see things as they are, to awaken to the truth and the reality. That's how you cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. That's how wisdom comes to be. This will bring us to the topic, the benefits of meditation, which I wanted to include in my today's talk. Since heedfulness can lead us to the meditation as taught by the Buddha, then what are the benefits that can arise with this type of meditation? Can anybody try to give me some answer? Some of you have done meditation before, right? So what are the benefits that will come your way if you do this type of meditation? We call it the mindfulness meditation. Anybody wants to try? The first benefit is very simple and obvious, isn't it? When you meditate, what happened to you? You become more peaceful and calmer, isn't it? So what type of benefit is this? You gain inner peace, right? Inner peace is very important, for peace is very difficult to come by nowadays. If you can get inner peace, it can help you so much in life. Especially so when you are in the midst of suffering, having a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, and your mind very restless because you have problems related to life. Do you all know what the common problems of life are? Just now we shared the 8 realities of life and existence, which is the Buddha's way of explaining life situation and problem during the early days. But nowadays, society has evolved and become more sophisticated. So we can actually reclassify the 8 reality into actual human problems and suffering that you all can relate to. Let us now summarize the first noble truth. The first noble truth, 8 reality of life and existence are: first, birth, old age, sickness and death. Old age, sickness, birth and death, we can relate them to health problem, isn't it? Especially getting old, having sickness and facing death. These are rather traumatic problems that human beings have to confront. Nowadays, cancer, stroke, heart attack, and a lot of other rather traumatic diseases like HIV, brain tumor, kidney failure, etc. are very common. So health problems are very real. When you and your loved ones are confronted with this type of very severe health issue, it can give rise to a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, and sadness, leading to depression. The thought will project, and you will attach, cling and hold via delusion because you don't understand what is going on. So health problem is a major issue. Then of course, we have the next reality, which is old age. Old age, or getting old, means going through the aging process, which can be equally traumatic because you can develop what they call very severe dementia and arthritis problem. Then as you age, your senses start to fail you and your health starts to deteriorate. You become very fragile, very weak, and you are full of health-related problems and issues. This is what the Buddha labeled as old age, or the reality of aging. So physical suffering leading to mental suffering is very common because physically you are affected through old age, and your consciousness, which is trapped inside, will feel it. Sometimes you don't need old age to cause such suffering. When you have an injury due to accident, you have to confront them too because your consciousness is trapped inside. There is a lot of pain, a lot of suffering leading to insomnia, inability to have proper sleep, sadness and depression. Then the third reality is what we call money problem or financial issue. Money problem in modern term is called financial problem. This one can be very real, isn't it? Those with financial problems, especially those who got themselves entangled with loan shark, can have very severe problems. Then sometimes when you are confronted with poverty, or your child need to go to university, or you need money to resolve certain issue, like to help them go through an operation or medical procedure, and you don't have the money, especially so if they want to go to the university, and you become desperate. So financial problem can be quite an issue. Then when you are in business, you are caught in a situation where you are short of capital and you have cash flow problem, and you may be wiped off. That can be very traumatic too. Then when your business is not doing well, you have cash flow problem, financial problem, leading to fear of business failure, bankruptcy, etc. Even young graduates nowadays, a lot of them have credit card problem leading to legal action by the bank. You have heard of this, right? Some of them are already bankrupt because of a high percentage of them just survive on the credit card. We are paying the 5% minimum charge. Then the fourth reality is career related. This one, career problem, is a very severe one too. What else can torment you? Relationship problem, isn't it? Your relationship with your loved one. This is to help us redefine the first noble truth reality. And these are very real problems. And even if you are very successful in life, when you confront some of this reality or problem, you can still become afflicted. Because relationship problem is not something money can help resolve. Or health issue and problem is also not something money can really help you to resolve. It may bring about better condition for better medical service and affordability, but it doesn't finally help you out because money cannot buy you help. Then when it comes to mental suffering, it is worse. The sixth reality is mental suffering. That's why we have a lot of depression cases nowadays. They have mental issue. They cannot actually live with those thoughts. Those very negative, obsessive, compulsive, and intrusive thoughts that constantly arise in their mind, leading to suicidal thoughts, etc. Nowadays, psychiatrists recognize such mental problem and call it OCD. So OCD, you learn a new word, obsessive compulsive disorder. These are people with depression. Obsessive means they are very obsessed with that thought. Then this thought is very compulsive. It keeps on coming in, intrude into your brain. Then it's a disorder. Means you are not having order. Then the seventh reality is when you break the law, when you overstep the line, when you get yourself into legal issues and entanglement. So all this can be very traumatic, very severe, and it can bring about a lot of problems, especially those problems involving police case. Especially if your children or loved ones are involved in drugs, murder, crime, etc. All this can be very traumatic and serious. And the fear they go through can be very traumatic too. Those who have experienced all this will understand. All these are very real life related issues. Then we go to benefits of meditation. The benefits of meditation are important. When you are faced with all these life related problems, the normal people's mind are very restless, with a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, and sadness. And these are all very negative energy, which can cause your immune system to go down. The reason being, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, and sadness can cause your cells to mutate and become stressful. So this is the source of traumatic disease leading to death. When you are confronted with all this and you don't understand how to recuperate or recover from it, then you go and see doctors. What they can do for you is to give you some form of medication. Maybe physically they can have an impact on you, but most of the time they will tell you it is more of a mental problem. They cannot help you in that sense. Then you go and see psychiatrists. Psychiatrists also depend on which one you see. There are some that are quite good. They know how to monitor you and lead you out of it. But most of the time, it's not a permanent fix or a permanent solution. Well, most of them may not have the Dhamma to explain to you clearly how you get yourself entangled. Most of them use drug, tranquilizer, and medication to help you sleep better and to stabilize your chemical imbalance to make you feel better. Like when you have this panic attack, anxiety, insomnia, leading to the depression and all those mental related issues, what do? They will give you some medication. Some of it is sedative. They call it tranquilizer. They make you sleepy because most people with depression cannot sleep. They have insomnia problem and they become very miserable. That's why it leads to suicidal thought and suicidal tendency, and it's very traumatic because they want to sleep but they cannot sleep. They want to be peaceful but they are not peaceful, because this panic attack can come anytime. There is a lot of fear in them. So this type of suffering, which is mental suffering, is so real. How are we going to deal with it? The Buddha said, you develop heedfulness. To develop heedfulness, you must train your mundane, heedless thinking mind in awareness or mindfulness. Then from there, use it to meditate, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path leading to heedfulness. When you start to meditate, the benefits of meditation will help you recover and recuperate from all these so-called negative energy field or mind states that can cause your immune system to go down, and for you to succumb to all this traumatic disease. When you are mindful, aware, and without thought, you are very serene, very peaceful, and very calm. So inner peace is the first mental benefit that can come about with this type of meditation. This inner peace born of piti will arise. When you are mindful without thought, piti is a meditative joy or rapture. So when you have inner peace, you will have this piti leading to sukhang. Sukhang is mental blissfulness of mind leading to the tranquility and stillness of mind, or the state of pasati. Pasati is the silent mind, the mind that is without thought and just aware. The silent mind will make you very peaceful and very calm. So this inner peace will bring about a lot of good positive stillness and silent energy. And this positive mental energy is conserved because it's not lost in thought. It's not channeled into fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, and wrong thought. During this moment, you can understand truth because there is clarity. And if you use it to radiate love, loving kindness, or metta, it can bring about the second benefit, which is inner well-being. Your mind and heart feels a lot better. You feel a lot more peaceful, calmer, more positive, and more confident within. The inner peace, inner well-being will lead to the third benefit, which is clarity of mind. Your mind has clarity because it is not preoccupied with fear, worry, and anxiety, and it is not restless or confused. When you are very peaceful and calm, you have clarity. You can reflect and contemplate into whatever life issue or problem that you have. Then with that clarity, you develop some form of understanding to cope with it, to overcome it. That's how meditation can help you in a big way. But the most important thing is to use this clarity of mind, which is the silent mind, to meditate and arise the wisdom via seeing things as they are. That's why the fourth benefit is wisdom. The wisdom that arises from proper meditation training can free your mind. And when you meditate with heedfulness, awareness, and clarity of mind, you can know exactly how you get yourself entangled in life. How you actually, via delusion, self-delusion, grasp, cling, hold, and react to arise the craving, which conditions your suffering. How the evil roots come to be and make you evil, and how the evil root condition your mental suffering. All this, you will start to understand then you will also start to understand the Noble Truth very clearly. The Buddha's word will become very clear to you. The reality of life and existence, the first eight conditions or realities of life that the Buddha spoke about, will also be very clear to you. Then all this that I have mentioned will also become very clear to you. You don't have delusion. All this negativity of mind state will not arise. That's why the Buddha said suffering need not be when you have the wisdom, when you have the understanding. So when you cultivate meditation, your mind state transforms from a heedless negativity of mind states with all the evil roots, with all the negative energy field. They transform into peaceful, calm, positive energy, confident, faith, love. So all these are very positive energy field. Then this will heal you, heal your mutated cells. Then it will raise your immune system back. Positive energy will make you healthy, strong. Then it will recuperate. Without fear, there is no mutation of cells. So all this will help. So with this understanding, you will become beautiful. Then I continue. When you are able to develop inner peace, it means every time you have a problem, you can go back to a quiet place to meditate and silence your mind, so that it will develop inner peace and inner well-being. But this is only a temporary solution, in the sense that when you come out of it, and when you are back to life, the problem can recur or come back to you again. That's why when you have these two states of inner peace and inner well-being, you will have this clarity of mind, and then you must use it to meditate, to develop the wisdom. Because without wisdom, you cannot free your mind. But when wisdom comes to be, all the delusion that condition you to grow up, cling and hold, and make you miserable, will slowly and surely fade away, leading to the happiness and joy deep within your mind states. Because for the first time in your life, you understand there is a way out of suffering. This way is so beautiful, and the Buddha has taught it to us so clearly. That's why when you start to insight into reality, life and existence, the characteristics of nature, and when you start to understand the noble teachings of impermanence, suffering state and non-self, or anicchang, dukkang and anatta, your mind opens up. It liberates, because that clarity leading to the wisdom is so powerful. It cut across all delusion and free you completely. And for the first time in your life, life become meaningful, life become beautiful, no more suffering, no more problem. Then after that, the associated benefits will come. You will have good sleep. A lot of them with insomnia problem will like this. Then you can use this meditative mind to do good and other wholesome things, so that you can be a blessing to all and to the world. And when you radiate more love or metta, cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path more and more, you will become more virtuous. You will have right view, which means you understand the secret of life. You understand the spiritual law that governs life and existence. You are no longer deluded. Then it will condition you to arise the right thought, right speech, and right action. And you will become such a beautiful living being. Then the way you live your life is based on right living and right livelihood. You will constantly cultivate the four right effort to purify your thought and to make yourself more and more virtuous with less and less negativity of mind state. And finally, you develop mindfulness leading to heedfulness and the samadhi to realize the enlightenment. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is very powerful. When you have them, it can actually help you in a very big way. So once your mind is trained, peaceful, with inner peace leading to inner well-being, clarity and wisdom, you will not have any more fear, worry, anxiety, or any other negative mind state. Your mind will not have any more attachment and craving. It is a free mind. That's how this mind can sleep very well. There is very good sleep, and to have good sleep is not an easy thing. For those who have insomnia, they will understand. For some, after taking sleeping pill that the psychiatrist or doctor has given them, they will have good sleep and they may feel very good. But most of the sedative medication that they give you, after you wake up, you are still groggy. But at least it prevents your mental activity from causing you insomnia. So it's like knock you off, make you unconscious, just like the antibiotic. It's to knock you off so that your internal system will have a chance to recuperate, so that this nature can actually bring about recovery or healing. The reason being, when you are thinking, your negative thoughts prevent your nature from working on the necessary requisite condition to recuperate, to allow you to recover. That's why when you have good sleep, it's like you feel recharged the next day. Sometimes if you know how to meditate, when you are very tired, you just silence your mind to meditate for 5 minutes, 10 minutes or 20 minutes, you will recover very well. And you feel very good because the inner peace and the inner calmness and the inner well-being can heal and recuperate the cells. All those cells that have been stressed out and tired, they are like recharged. The positive energy make them feel good and your immune system recover. So good sleep is one of them. Then with this clarity of mind and ability to see things clearly, you will be able to study better, do your work more efficiently, which means whatever things that you attempt to do, like your career, research or whatever, you will and you can do them more efficiently. You need to have this type of mind for you to be a blessing to all. When you have the meditation, the wisdom and the Noble Eightfold Path cultivated, you are very beautiful. You can be a blessing not only to you, but to all, especially your loved ones, your friends, your colleagues, and anybody who has relationship with you, to society, to the community, and even to the environment and the planetary consciousness, because every thought you arise is so beautiful. This is the last benefit, blessing to all. So all these are the important benefits of meditation that can arise the moment you develop heedfulness. And heedfulness comes from mindfulness. And to be mindful, you need to understand two things which the Buddha clearly explained under his teaching. He said human beings are not peaceful, not mindful, and not able to develop the meditative or inner peace and the inner calmness to meditate is because they have a lot of mental hindrance. He called them the five mental hindrance of mind. The five mental hindrance are very real. The first two are your sensual desire and ill will. These two are a pair. It's also related to the evil roots of greed and hatred. Every time you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactile feel and think without wisdom and equanimity of mind and the samadhi, you will react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, etc. And your reaction is always either negative or positive. If you like the sense experience, then there is positive craving. And that is sensual desire. The moment you develop this, your mind is distracted. You are preoccupied with that sense experience. There is no more clarity, and you cannot meditate anymore, because this mind that is preoccupied with the sense experience is lost in thought. Hence heedless. Then when you react negatively, you arise the fear, worry, anxiety, sadness, sorrow and lamentation and dislike. That's why you have a lot of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experiences. And these are the duality of life. These are the first two mental hindrances of mind, which hinders you from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. That's why there is no more inner peace and inner calmness leading to the inner well-being. So this aspect of understanding is very important. The third mental hindrance is sleepiness, lethargic mind, sloth and torpor. The Buddha said, if you don't understand the importance of meditation, of training this mind to be mindful or heedful, and you don't see the importance of it because you cannot understand life, then you will feel sleepy. It's just like when you attend a class you don't like. You don't know what's going on and you feel sleepy. That sleepiness is a mental hindrance. When you are sleepy, you are not aware. The mind doesn't have clarity. That is why you cannot be peaceful when you cannot meditate. The Buddha said the fourth mental hindrance is restlessness of mind. And this is the worst, which means your mind becomes agitated and restless. How did it happen? Why are you not happy and peaceful? It's because you have problems, like health problem, financial problem, career problem, relationship problem, mental problem, old age and sickness, and fear of death, children's problem, in-law problem, neighbor's problem, etc. So all these problems lead to fear, worry, anxiety, sadness, sorrow, and lamentation. That's why your mind becomes restless and is not peaceful because of your worry, fear, and anxiety. Nowadays, a lot of parents worry about their children, their career, their relationship, and their children's future. Then you also have so many things to worry about. Your health problem, your financial position, your business, your relationship with people, etc. There are so many things that can make you full of worry, anxiety, and fear. So when these things come about, your mind is not peaceful, restless, agitated, and you will think a lot. The more you think, the more fearful you become, because it projects the thought. What happened if? These words are not reality, yet you projected those thoughts and developed the fear unnecessarily. That's how you become anxious. When your children doesn't come back in time, they are late, especially so if they are your daughters. You may look like, you may worry a lot. Then sometimes spouse or the husband went out 12 o'clock midnight, still not back yet. You are still wide awake, waiting and waiting. Call the handphone, no reply, because switch off. Then you worry more. When he comes back, you get angry because all sorts of thought went through your mind. You think the fellow is trying to do something funny outside. You confronted him via asking, why didn't you on your handphone? So all this misunderstanding can lead to further suffering in life. When there is lack of trust, when there is no sincerity in the relationship, when there is no understanding of each other, then suffering becomes more and more real. Then when you take things for granted, especially between spouse, when you don't know how to arise the appropriate right speech to make them feel good and happy, and when you do not appreciate their contribution to the family unit, then problems and misunderstanding will arise. That's why you must appreciate life. Do appreciate what they have done for you, their love, their care, and their sacrifices. Even as children, you should appreciate what your parent has done for you. And as parents, we should also appreciate how our children actually think of us, help us in whatever way. Especially so between spouse. If you take things for granted, there is no more appreciation and love. Then it develops hatred and misunderstanding. You can see all this very clearly because they always argue. The ego takes over. And every time they argue, there is no right speech anymore. Gentle, pleasant, and kind speeches are all gone and no more. only angry and egoic speeches come to be. So life is like that. When you don't have wisdom, when you don't have the Dhamma understanding, the mind gets agitated because of those wrong thoughts. That's why cultivating Noble Eightfold Path is very important. It is about abandoning wrong thought and cultivating right thought. Wrong thoughts are thoughts that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, suffering, misery, your selfishness, your emotional negativity, etc. These are all wrong thoughts. So it's very easy to recognize them, isn't it? When you are not happy and peaceful, whatever you think are the wrong thoughts. Then what are right thoughts? If you have right thought, it will condition you to have right speech, right action, and right livelihood following the Noble Eightfold Path. Then life becomes beautiful. So what are right thoughts? The easiest answer is what? Thoughts that don't have the evil roots. Everything that is not wrong thought is right thought, isn't it? But you don't know how to put it into practice. So you actually have to reflect and contemplate on what constitutes right thought. In the text, it's just mentioned that the four Brahma Vihara are the four right thoughts. When you have that as the base, it becomes right thought. But you must understand what these are. The first Brahma Vihara state is metta. When you have metta, you have right thought. Do you know what metta is? True metta is universal love. When you have metta, you can never get angry. You can never get jealous. There is no more negativity. There is only love. So when you arise right thought on love, there is no anger, envy, jealousy. They are gone because you really love. And with this love, you can only radiate well-being and happiness to all. And right thought that has love should be the basis of good relationship. When I love you, I respect you, I appreciate what you have done, I care for you, I will talk to you very nicely, I am no longer angry with you, I accept you for what you are, then I will do my best to bring about good relationship. We are arising the kind, gentle, and pleasant speeches that can bring about happiness, joy, harmony, and understanding to our life and relationship. Then the family units become beautiful. You can go back and try it out. For the first time, you go back and tell your wife, I don't know what you call her, honey or what. Honey, thank you so much for what you have done and sacrificed for us. She will be very surprised because you never do that. Why all of a sudden you are like that? Then she may think initially, my husband must be up to something, otherwise he won't be so courteous and nice to me. But if you express it sincerely, we are understanding or telling her the truth. Actually, I have recently reflected, and I really appreciate your great contribution and sacrifice for our family, for us all. You have helped us look after the household, the marketing, the cooking, the washing, etc. And we know these are not easy things to do. I hire a maid, also not so reliable. I have to pay. I have to take the trouble to go to the maid agency to sort out all those related issues. Contact maid agency, renew her contract, and pay her levy and agency fee and all the other related things. Besides, there are so many problems related to maid. But you are my wife. I don't have to pay you. And yet you willingly do all this for us with love, with true love and sacrifice. I really appreciate and thank you so much. I truly rejoice. When you do that, your wife will be very happy and she will work for you more. There is a lot more joy when she does those work because she is being appreciated. But if you take her for granted and ignore her contribution, do you know what your wife will think? This guy thinks that I'm a maid. In Hokkien, it's called asampo. Every day, ask me to do all these things, but never appreciate what I have done. So out of anger and unhappiness, do you know what will happen? The cooking also no good. The washing also no good. Then when you comment, she will tell you all. If you are so good, you wash yourself, you cook yourself. Then she may say, I'm going on strike. You take care of the children and the household. You just argue. But when you appreciate what they have done with a kind and appropriate right speeches, they will feel so good and happy. Then everything they do for you, you say thank you so much. You don't just take things for granted and get angry. Most spouse, they are not sensitive to feel for their spouse. I know. Don't repeat this thing. And don't every time nag me when they argue. If you do this, then how are you going to communicate? Where are your kind, gentle, and understanding right speeches? The wife is also unhappy. Whole day, especially how housewife sacrifice doing all these things for you, and when you come back, not a word of appreciation. Someone gets scolding from you. What type of husband is that? Their thought were think negatively. And when you do this, do you think your wife will be happy? Do you know why the husband is like that? Because he himself had enough problem in the office. That's why when he comes home, he is already not happy. He then reacted out of frustration. But people without the Dhamma are like that. They cannot resolve your problem. Because you don't have... You cannot solve your problem because you don't have clarity of mind. You don't feel for your loved one. You don't know how to go through life. But when you feel for them, you appreciate what they have done for you, then you arise all the appropriate right thought leading to the right speech and right action. Then your life will transform. You tell your wife, honey, you have done well. I think tonight you deserve a good dinner or a good meal. Let's go for dinner. Where do you want to go? For the first time you ask that, I can tell you she will be very happy. There's a lot of joy too, but it doesn't mean that it's only for the wife. The wife can also do the opposite for their husband. You can tell them the opposite. I understand how much you have sacrificed for the family. You work so hard, sometimes at the expense of your freedom, your own holiday. But you make sure that was what they do. Otherwise, it's not sincere. You have to bring about what they call good relationship through understanding them and supporting them. That's why they always have this good saying, for every man's success, there's a woman behind. Do you think it's correct? But sometimes the woman may not be the wife, but most of the time it's the wife that is responsible. But the funny thing about men is without wisdom, when they have too much money, that's the time the wife is worried. The strange thing is when they don't have money, the wife is also worried. So what do they want? Maybe they want the husband to just have enough money, not too much. This is your fear, isn't it? That's why if you have Dhamma, all these problems won't arise. Then the wealth will come. The blessing that you have developed through your cultivation, like your good karma, your good merits, will bring forth a lot of goodness and well-being to you. You have a lot of generosity, a lot of kindness. You will have good karma. That's why when you think of generosity, it's right thought. When you think of helping people, contributing back to society, to help humanity in whatever you do, through service, charity, or whatever, these are right thoughts. Then thoughts of sincerity, contentment, respect, gratitude, all these are right thoughts. Not necessarily only the four Brahma Vihara. Then learn to rejoice in goodness, kindness, generosity, and wholesomeness of others, especially your loved ones. We are saying sadhu to you for having done a good job, for having done a lot of good things. Don't worry. Don't always complain, we are saying. Why simply donate? You think money
is not money. Your wife wants to do charity. You go and pour cool water. By doing so, you bring about conflict and unnecessary misunderstanding. But if it's her money and she wants to do this because it is something wholesome, then you should rejoice. Even if she asks money from you because she is a housewife, she has got no income, you should consider, because this is goodness, this is meritorious, this is kindness. Why not, if you can afford, you just support her? Then it becomes right thought, no more negativity of mind state. So the teaching is very simple, very beautiful. I don't have enough time to elaborate on the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, because it's a very wide topic. So right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and the four right efforts are very important. You can cultivate the first six Noble Eightfold Path factor, is already very good, especially as a lay person. Then when you develop wisdom and the meditation via right mindfulness and samadhi, it will arise the spiritual understanding that you need to complement your materialistic life. This will then bring about a complete understanding of life. Without spiritual understanding, life is incomplete. You can still have suffering when you confront the first noble truth reality without wisdom. So with this, I will conclude my today's talk, and I hope it benefits you all. Thank you so much for your patience and attentiveness in hearing me out. Then there's a comment by Brother Jim. He said, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you so much, Brother Teo, for your very interesting and enlightening talk this morning. I think it has touched on the lives of most of us. We, our family, our friends and relatives, have also encountered countless life problems that have caused so much pain, lamentation, grief, and despair, and anxiety, and worry, and so on and so forth. And Radio has explained to us how to overcome all this through understanding the secret of life, the Four Noble Truths. Any question you would like to post to Brother Teo? Yeah. So this one, what is the time now? I almost give you the talk. Huh? The question is even more interesting. You go back and read. Huh? I will share the first question with you. Because this question was asked by a doctor, a psychiatrist. Huh? Question one from the floor. The person who asked that question is a doctor. He said, he's a psychiatrist. Firstly, thank you very much, Brother, for sharing your knowledge. In fact, this is one of the best Dhamma talks I have ever attended. My question is this. Buddha has definitely described a lot about suffering. Did he ever describe about depression during his time or any experience? He had been dealing with it, and he had seen during his time. Thank you. So how are you going to answer his question? Buddha got teach about depression or not? I was not born when the Buddha is around. So my answer to him is very simple. Thank you so much for the question. It's very good. It's a very good question. I have to be frank with you. I'm not around when the Buddha was around. I cannot answer that question, but roughly based on my nature's understanding and my cultivation, I can share this with you. During the Buddha's time, life was simpler. Society was not so sophisticated and evolved during that time. Renunciation is actually an honor to the family. Going forth by one of your family members becoming a monk is considered a very honorable thing. But nowadays, parents are different. They are so materialistic. Once they hear of their son become wanting to renounce, they will have problem. Ah, yeah, they say, study for so many years to become a graduate, a professional, and then wasted their life by becoming a monk. They cannot understand it's important. Then during the time of the Buddha, There were not so many sophisticated economic activity. Life was not so stressful, but simpler. So very likely, I use the word, they have no choice. Oh, sorry, they have not much chance for depression. Should not be the word no chance. Not much chance for depression. Do you know why? It is the Maslow's need theory or hierarchy, which is simple. What are the first two basic needs that human beings look for? Food and shelter, isn't it? When there is not enough food on the table and shelter over your head, what is the first thing that you look for in life? You want to fulfill these two needs. That's why you work and work and look for those food and shelter, because you don't have such thing as health issue, etc. The reason being, you cannot afford to fall sick. True or not? Not enough food on your table, no shelter over your head. You think you got time to get sick? You will go all out and work, I tell you. You think you got time for depression? You don't have time, understand? That's I seen through my village when I was young. I saw those people. They got no time to fall sick. Sick also, they have to work. They say, otherwise, who is going to take care of my family? You haven't seen those situations. When I was young, I witnessed them. I pitied them. But what can be done? Because there is their karma, understand? So this part is very useful. I remember when I was young. I told you all about the story also. These are the same thing that I can recall. During the 60s when I was young, not to say during the Buddha's time, during the 60s and the 50s when I was very young, even in the early 70s before I went to university, I saw in my village people getting sick. They don't really know what this sickness was because they have no idea what cancer was, what TB was. TB is tuberculosis. They thought it was normal. If they could just go on with their life, they would go on, even very sick, until in the deathbed. They still refuse to go to the hospital. They prefer to go and see the medium, the Chinese sensei. That was the tradition at that time. And most of the suffering at that time was very much less, not so complicated as our society nowadays. However, for our society now, the stress and sensuality level are so different, so high. That's why the internet has made a big difference to what society is nowadays. During the olden days, everything was very slow. You need to walk very far. So people were mainly towards agricultural skill sets, cultivating spiritual understanding and doing small retail business. I believe there may be some monks who have problem because as a monk sometimes it's not easy. You feel very lonely at times. You meditate until you don't know what is going on. Can be very confused because the sankhara are like that when one is lacking in wisdom. Then there is also politics within the sangha community. You can read the sutta, then you will know. They align themselves to different disciples of the Buddha. That's why you can see the Sikhism that Devadatta created. Remember Devadatta, the cousin brother of the Buddha. He wanted the Buddha to implement strict vegetarian into the monk's rule. He knew the Buddha wouldn't agree because the Buddha has his reason for it. So he tried to impress the other followers. See, the Buddha is not serious, he said. He didn't even want to implement vegetarian. To Devadatta, implementing vegetarian means he is more compassionate. But this is just outwardly. It's not at the heart level. It's outwardly telling people, I'm vegetarian. I implement this rule. So he managed to pull one group out of it. That's how Sikhism happened at that time, due to difference of opinion. Then later on, they even had this issue before the Buddha's parinibbana, his passing away. Some were aligned to Mahakasapa, some were aligned to Ananda and Sariputta. I think this type of politics, even in office, you can witness a lot aligning to whatever factions. There are a lot of rather weird human behavior, a common phenomenon of humanity, because it is due to delusion. The conditioned attachment and clinging, the craving to be. So this question about did the Buddha talk about depression during his time, I really can't answer you because I didn't see it mentioned anywhere in the sutta. But based on what I understand, there are less cases at that time, even if it's more towards the community of monks rather than the lay people. The lay people, their lives were simpler. But for those who renounce and become monks, they are more philosophical. They must be the word think, they think deep into life. So that one is a spelling mistake. So when you think too much psychologically and mentally, when you think too much, psychological and mental problem can arise because wisdom is not to be found at the thought level. So this is how I understand and see it. I just share what I understand and I have to be very frank. Whatever I don't know, I tell you I don't know. Because during the Buddha's time, I was not around, and I don't read so much of the sutta. So this is how I will understand it, okay? Thank you, and I hope I have answered your question. Thank you, and sadhu. Okay, the rest you go back and read. This is a very good book, yeah? And I didn't know until out of the blue I suddenly saw this book. Then I remember my talk, 2013. I already told you I got no affinity with India. How many times must I tell you? Well, I walked the other way. I didn't go there. But I have affinity with his teaching. Yeah, his teaching is the teachings of all Buddha, understand or not? Okay, I sit on the chair. Actually, Yun Chan's question also not bad. How do I know? But I can tell you, I don't have psychic. I cannot read mind. I cannot see past life. But yet, I can tell you very definitely, I got no affinity with India. Even Burma also same. Sri Lanka also same. Until now, I have not stepped foot on these three countries. But I went to China, Thailand very often. Because of the affinity there. Even Japan, I went. So a lot of things your nature will know. And that talk was only 1 hour plus. I covered so much. The Q&A were very good. You should continue. They ask questions until I have to go. Because I have a lunch appointment with them. They booked me before the talk. So I said, They were telling me the people are there waiting for me. So we have to end the Q&A. I remember that day was a very special day. Yeah, that day, what I spoke was very relevant to life and society. But at that time, we don't have video camera yet. Otherwise, that talk would be very popular. Because it was just an audio file. And luckily, Puan Chi decided to do a transcript. That's how you manage to have the condition to receive the book. But the audio file is in our website. You can go and listen. But when you listen direct from the recording, is clearer, better. Because the way I express the thing, although a lot of colloquial English, but you all can understand, because you all are from Malaysia. Our Malaysian English, but for foreigner, I think they will find it a bit difficult. Some of them may not like it. What are you trying to explain? All the la la la, ayya, ayo, and many of our colloquial dialects. Like the Hokkien or Sampo, I don't think they understand. Maybe Singaporean will understand. So do you know how to apply the Buddha Dhamma or not now? If I don't explain the importance of heedfulness and mindfulness under this talk, how many of you really know how to apply? You only know how to cultivate them. But the application is so wide. The benefits of meditation, so clear, understand? And what is heedfulness? How it transforms you. How it develops the training of the mind to be heedful. Then when you are heedful, all of the negativity of mind state is gone. That's why you have to understand the Noble Eightfold Path. What constitutes wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. Then what constitutes right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then the four right effort to cultivate. That is a very big field. And you don't do that, you have not really developed the meditation. Because as far as the Buddha is concerned, the real meditation is cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. Not just sit vipassana. That is only a very small part of Noble Eightfold Path. But you need that one to have penetrative understanding. But the real training is the 10-step Avijja Sutta. From there, you progress. First, step one, have Dhamma friends, which you all have. They're constantly listening to the true Dhamma. That one with the website, you should do it. And you will progress very fast. But recently, my nature can feel there's a lot of joy. Your last Sunday talk, you go and listen. A lot of them now understand. Oh, can answer already now. Can express the understanding and all those things. And I was very surprised when I asked them to feel the floor. There was one lady say, Vertio, I can feel the coldness. I say, just the coldness. What else? Cannot explain. Then I say, who can feel the vibration between your hand and the floor? So many put up hand. Means their sati has developed. Otherwise you cannot. To really feel, when you are silent, all the vibration will come out. Then you, without thought, you really feel. Just the awareness aware. No word, nothing. Then you become very sensitive. Then all of the vibration, initially is very gross. Like very violent. To me, it's very violent. But as you develop the ability to be mindful, to be silent, it becomes more and more quiet, more and more quiet, until it becomes very quiet, very still. Like no more movement. That is what sati is all about. A lot of people doesn't know what this is. Then daily mindfulness is again different. When you have it, you can tell me a lot of things. Then you can go into specific phenomenal awareness. The silent mind in heedfulness. Then when you complete this silent, spacious awareness without a center, all this you will experience them. Everything that I share in my Dhamma sharing, you will experience them. And you will know what these things are. That's why the real cultivation is very different. But now the consciousness is different. I realized the last 1 or 2 years, a lot of Kayamita can understand what I share already. And a lot of the deeper teaching, Dhamma, all start to surface, the conditions start to arise. Last time they can't. So just now, I think, Pauline, where is she? They're still hiding there. She asked me, wow, Brother Teo, Ponchi asked you on that question, very deep, you know, your answer also very deep, she cannot understand. You want to repeat or not? Pass the mic to her. On the thing. No, you tell them exactly how you actually ask me those questions.
Brother, I say 两无求啦. Because Brunchy is saying A and B. I think A is about Krishnamurti. B is about the Zen. So Krishnamurti, I remember years ago when Brother was starting to introduce this Krishnamurti. When you send it to us, we read. Really, you ask us to read the book before we come to the class. So seriously, when I read through, really don't understand. No?
Yeah, you sure don't
really
understand.
Really don't understand. The time was, then after I come to the class, brother explain, and I go through this type of process, I follow. I mean, to a certain extent,
I understand
the shallow parts.
Okay.
So when Ponchi give the second one, I already see the short statement, already don't understand. Then some more she asked Brother the question, I also don't understand. Answer from Brother, lagi I don't understand. When Brother say compare A and B, if you're under, you have understanding, you, see the Brother, your last question, answer,
okay,
don't
very
understand.
Good. Yeah, very good. That's why she arise the condition. Then I explained to her. You remember? That one was, I think, Tammy found another one. Tammy one also very good. The complimentary one. Then the third one only Ponchi Senhao. So I will read to you, then you understand. This is very good. You say, Ponchi say, in Zen, you don't find the answer. You lose the question. This is exactly what I have been telling you all this time. That initially, from the thought, you have a lot of questions on. You ask a lot of questions on. But I say, forget about the question. Cultivate. Investigate. Reflect. Contemplate. Then when you understand, the question will be self-answered. Means the question loses itself. There is no more question. That should be the way to cultivate. So this part is about the cultivation. But the first two is very interesting. You see, when Krishnamurti say, to ask a question is not to find an answer, but to discover and find out for oneself. So what did I advise you all in the early days? I said, a lot of you, when I say, do you have any question, you know what you will tell me or not? But until I meditate like that, right or wrong. Or I meditate with this problem, this experience. What must I do? What is all this question? You are looking for answer, isn't it? So when you are looking for answer, you are not cultivating. Well, you never reflect, you never investigate. You never inquire. You never find out. And you are asking questions without understanding. That's why you are wasting time. So if I'm equally gullible, I will answer you. Then I also like you. That's why I refuse to answer you. I say, forget about all this type of question. I say, investigate into it. Find out. Then after that, you will ask the right question. Because if you don't investigate and you don't find out, you ask me, no point. So based on this J. Krishnamurti quote is very good. Question become important when this is understood. And the question itself makes the mind sharp. But if one is expecting an answer to a question, the mind naturally become expectant, awaiting, and therefore not clear. This one is by Tammy Wana. So this one and the Zen one is quite similar. But if one is expecting an answer to a question, the mind naturally becomes expectant, awaiting, and is therefore not clear, not decisive, and not capable of discovery. You know why? Yeah, you didn't inquire, you didn't reflect, you didn't contemplate. You only want answer. Then you become so gullible. You know, what will happen? You go and tell people, hey, Brother Teo say, when you have this problem, you meditate like that. What is happening if you do that? If you do that, you are not cultivating. you are being gullible. You believe what I say. Then you go and do without understanding. So when you meditate without understanding, when you do without understanding, you become confused. That's why you can never understand. So I come back to Puan Chi Yuan, the first one. Okay. How come I cannot find? Puan Chi Yuan is further above one. Down, huh? Oh. You mean yours come first, huh? Huh? Tell me one first, huh? Oh. I thought it's the other way around. Go to media. Never mind, I try to get it. Not the Zen one, no. The first quote, no. 3rd November, huh? 3rd of November. Oh, okay. Ah, okay. So this one is very good on seeking. Yeah? That's why I explained in the Dhamma talk. I seek because I am dissatisfied and confused. Out of my confusion, misery, endless agony and suffering, I am seeking something already established because I have projected what I want. So here the meaning means you have a lot of life problem, a lot of things you cannot understand. So you hear people say, go and look for teacher, true or not? So you seek. You seek what? Actually you seek enlightenment. But you don't know what enlightenment is. So what you do? You gullibly seek teachers, seek method, seek technique. So you are gullible because you only look for the impressive words. That monk very good. That monk is an arahan. That monk is enlightened. Or who where the retreat very good. He can read mind, he can do this, he can do that. So you become what? Gullible. So you seek. So what do you seek? You seek outside. Understand not? That's why I reply to Puan Chi. If you do this type of seeking, you will get lost. You cannot find. Because you must seek with understanding. Understanding means what? You seek enlightenment in there. And what is enlightenment according to the Buddha? As defined the salutation to the Dhamma. This Dhamma is beyond thought, beyond time. So how can you seek it in the field of thought? Do you understand? Field of thought means what? Memory. Which is within the known. How can you find something that is beyond thought? Beyond mind. So this type of seeking you cannot find. So you become so gullible and your senses are all outside. That's why you keep on seeking outside. But you never seek within. You never silence your mind because you didn't know that there is a nature beyond the mundane mind, beyond the thought. That's why the Buddha said this Dhamma is beyond thought, beyond mind. So when you realize this, you seek with understanding, you don't seek with a confused mind, understand? Then you will not get lost. That's why seeking needs to be understood. That's why I told Puan Chi, what happens if the seeker is the seek? Do you know the meaning or not? You are trying to seek enlightenment, isn't it? And what is that? The nature within that is beyond thought, beyond mind. Actually, you are seeking your own nature within, but you don't know. You have been carrying that thing with you, that gem, that beautiful nature, and you don't know. So what are you trying to seek? Out of confusion, you become gullible, you seek outside. You look for teacher, method, technique, and everything. You never seek the truth. Seek the truth means what? Listen attentively. The art of listening. Understand? That is real seeking. Means you listen, understand. If it matches with the Buddha's word, then you reflect on it, contemplate on it, and give it a try. Otherwise, forget about it. All the method, technique, just because of the big name and all those things, vipassana, insight, 16 stages, all this got no meaning. Method, technique. Oh, this is vipassana. Oh. That is samatha. And this is jnana knowledge and all those things. So what are you seeking? You are seeking words to the thought, concept after concept. You are not seeking truth. You are not seeking meditation as taught by the Buddha. The Buddha told you to be aware, mindful, heedful. You never want to develop that. You never want to understand that. That's why you go and do all those noting without understanding. You become gullible. That's why it becomes so difficult for people to develop the understanding. So seek need to be developed through an understanding. You must seek with understanding. When you understand, it's very easy to seek. Then wherever there is truth, you listen, you will know. That's why I told you, whatever meditation you do, people teach you. If it doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path, forget about it. It doesn't lead to the real sati, to realize the true mind, the silent mind. Forget about it. All these are important pointers. That's why the unique code, which is coming out. Once that one come out, you go through again, it will bring you back into focus, the cultivation, the practice. Okay? I think I see the time. Huh? Just like I heard the alarm. So let us rejoice and stop. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, today better. I exceeded 5 minutes only. Not too much. So go back and read the book. And maybe reflect on it, contemplate on it, and try to cultivate it. The advice given are very simple and very beautiful. If you put it into practice, I tell you, your relationship with your spouse, with your children, with other fellow living beings or human beings will improve tremendously. That one is the very slight cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path. That's why I ended the talk by telling them it's a very big topic. I don't have time to go into Noble Eightfold Path. But there are so many things. The Four Right Effort itself is such a big topic. Then the Three Right Views too is a very big topic. So cultivating Noble Eightfold Path really need a lot of understanding and right effort to develop them. The Four Right Efforts are very important. Then through the Four Right Effort, you develop the initial cultivation. Then through the initial wisdom, you go into the meditation, bhavana. That's how you awaken. The awakening can happen very easily when you understand. Follow the Avijja Sutta. The first three steps, all of you have. Dhamma friend, listening to Dhamma, reflect, contemplate. I think most of you all have. Then you will have faith. Then after that, the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara, step four. And that one, stabilize it. Sharpen it. Continuously listen, reflect, contemplate, inquire, and develop the stability of understanding. Then after that, your mind different because you would have straightened your view. Your daily mindfulness become more and more, more and more. You'll have less and less of the first two mental hindrances of sensual desire and ill will. That's how you have more and more moment of peace, calmness, because of your daily mindfulness. You have more and more moment of space within thought, the silent mind, the awareness. Most of the time you are aware. Then sati leading to sati sampajana will take over. So when that one stabilizes, you can see your subtle defilement. Then you can root them out using the meditative approach, the five ways that the Buddha taught, especially the third and fourth way. Then after that, you will have sense restraint. You can never break your precept after that, which means you are at least a Sotapan, if not a Sakadagami. Then after that, the three way of right conduct, automatic, they will come out. And you will be very different. Your mind becomes very sensitive and you can understand many things. Then fourth foundation of mindfulness is like very easy to cultivate. Then you keep on witnessing the seven factors of enlightenment, which is step 9. Then you will hit step 10, enlightenment in the here and the now. And it's not difficult under this condition, this asana with the understanding. So I wish all of you the best. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So let us do our sharing of merits. Akasata cha bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakantu lokasasana etawata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me yatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me yatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me yatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo devo vasatu kalena sasa sampati hetu cha fito bhavatu loko cha Raja bhavatu dhammiko imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect to Triple Gem, then we will end. Thank you.